ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 13 ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಜ್ಞ ವಿಭಾಗ ಯೋಗ ಶ್ಲೋಕಾಸ್ 6 and 7. ಮಹಾಭೂತಾನ್ಯಹಂಕಾರ ಬುದ್ಧಿರವ್ಯಕ್ತಮೇವ ಚ ಇಂದ್ರಿಯಾಣಿ ದಶೈಕಂಚ ಪಂಚಚೇಂದ್ರಿಯ ಗೋಚರಾಃ ಇಚ್ಛಾ ದ್ವೇಷ ಸುಖಂ ದುಃಖಂ ಸಂಗಾತಶ್ಚೇತನಾಧೃತಿಃ ಏತತ್ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಂ ಸಮಾಸೇನ ಸವಿಕಾರಮುದಾಹೃತಂ. ಸೊ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ ವೆಬಿನಾರ್ ವಿ ಸಾ ಶ್ಲೋಕ ನಂಬರ್ 6 ಅಂಡ್ ವಿ ಸೆಟ್ ದೀಸ್ ಟೂ ಶ್ಲೋಕಾಸ್ ದೇ ಡಿಫೈನ್ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಂ. ವಾಟ್ ಈಸ್ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಂ? ದಿ ಎಂಟೈರ್ ಯೂನಿವರ್ಸ್ ಇಸ್ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಂ. ಅಂಡ್ ಇಟ್ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟೆಡ್ ಟು ಟಾಕ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ದಿ ಸಾಂಖ್ಯ ಫಿಲಾಸಫಿ. ವಿ ಇಂಟರ್ಪ್ರೆಟೆಡ್ ದ ವೇ ದಿ 24 ತತ್ವಾಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಂ ಆರ್ ಆಲ್ ಮೇಡ್ ಅಪ್ ಆಫ್. ಅಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ವಿ ಪ್ರೊಸೀಡೆಡ್ ಟು ಟಾಕ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ದಿ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರ ವಿಕಾರಂ ಇನ್ ದಿ 7th ಶ್ಲೋಕ. ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ದ ಮಾಡಿಫಿಕೇಶನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಕ್ಷೇತ್ರಂ ದಟ್ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಟು ಸಿ ಇನ್ ದಿ ಶ್ಲೋಕ, 7th ಶ್ಲೋಕ ವಿಚ್ ವಿ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ರೆಡ್. ಇಚ್ಛಾ ದ್ವೇಷ ಸುಖಂ ದುಃಖಂ ಸಂಘಾತಶ್ಚೇತನಾ ಧೃತಿ. ಸೊ ಇಫ್ ಯು ಟೇಕ್ ದ ವರ್ಡ್ ಸಂಘಾತ, ಇಟ್ ಮೀನ್ಸ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ, ದಿ ಗ್ರೂಪ್, ದಿ ಕಾಂಬಿನೇಷನ್. And what does it refer to here? Refers to the physical body, because the body is made up of the combination of all 5 elements: earth, water, air, fire, as you know, akasha, all those things. So we are occupying in the body. So that is why the body is called bhautikam, made up of pancha bhautika elements. So bhutebhyaha jatam bhautikam. Okay, so pancha bhautika shariram idam, that is the body. So that is sanghataha. So once the sanghata, the body comes, within the sanghata, we have got the body, we have got the jnanendriyas, the sense organs, the karmendriyas, the organs of action, all are placed in proper places. And by mere combination of the body and sense organs, life will not come. Just by the combination of these two, because all these are jadam in nature, all of them are inert in nature, because they are born out of avyaktam, which is fundamental matter. We saw in the last class. So moola prakriti hi primordial matter. So buddhi, ahankara, mind, sense organs, subtle elements, all of them are only matter. So Krishna adds another thing, chetana. Chetana means sentiency, that which is awareful, that consciousness, sentient, living. How does the sentiency or chetana comes, if we ask that question? When the body, mind, sense organs, etc. come together, they become capable of manifesting or reflecting the Purusha, the Chaitanyam or the Kshetrajnaha. So that's what's a special property. So sentiency is born out of the reflected consciousness, which is called Chidabhasaha, Vedantic term, Chidabhasaha, the reflected consciousness, because this medium, made up of the combination of all these elements that we just now mentioned, is capable of reflecting Chaitanyam. Just as, even though the earth also is a matter, glass also is a matter, the glass is able to reflect my face, whereas the earth is not able to. So what is the difference between the mirror and the table, for example? Both are matter only. Mirror alone reflects, because table has a rough surface, whereas the mirror has got a refined, polished surface, capable of reflecting. Similarly, everywhere the matter is gross, but where the mind, sense organs, etc. are there, it is subtle matter. It is not gross matter. And so it is capable of reflecting, manifesting the abhasaha. And so we call it a living being. And so if you remember, life being also is jadam. They are all jadam only. What is the difference between them? Life being is matter which reflects consciousness. Inert being is matter which does not reflect consciousness. Both are inert only. So a statue also is a panchabhautikam only. For example, they make a statue of somebody. It is also pancha bhautikam only, made up of all these five elements. This body also is made up of five elements. Statue also is jadam, so also the body. But statue also is kshetram, so also is the body. All being same, the only difference is statue does not reflect consciousness, whereas this body can reflect consciousness. Both are jadam, both are kshetram. And so sangataha means the combination comes. Once the combination comes, chetana, the sentiency that comes, and once sentiency comes, all transactions begin. Like what? Iccha, iccha raga. All attachments, desires, everything. Dvesha, sukham, dukham, all these reactions, they all begin. In what? In this jadam kshetram only, this inert body, all these things start to come. Iccha, dvesha, all being, they all belong to the mind, emotions, which is jadam again. So all these are thought modifications occurring in the kshetram, the body, the mind. So iccha is ragaha, it is a vritti, it's a thought, the thought change. Similarly, dvesha is another thought mode, the likes and dislikes, hatred. So sukham is priya, moda, pramoda, all these things are all again vrittis, thoughts. So thought modes only. So dukkham also is another thought mode, sukham also is another thought mode, and finally dhritihi. Dhritihi is also another thought mode. It is called fortitude, the sternness of the mind. Dhritihi. And none of them can belong to kshetrajna, because kshetrajnaha is nirvikaram. Whereas these are all modifications. Vikaram means modifications. Kshetrajna is nirvikaram, whereas these are all modifications. So I, the kshetrajnaha, have no ragadvesha. We should never say, I like, I dislike, etc. They all belong to kshetram, the body. So, iccha, dveshaha, sukham, dukkham, sangadas chetana, dhritihi. Okay. And here the beauty is that chetana, the reflected consciousness, that is also put in the kshetram only. That reflected consciousness is not separately available. It is inside the kshetram only. Why? Because that is reflected where? In the kshetram only. The consciousness is reflected in the kshetram only. So reflection is present where the kshetram is present. Therefore, there is a reflection only in the mirror. So the kshetram. Similarly, that also goes, that also belongs to the kshetram only, the reflected consciousness. Not only that, if the kshetram perishes, then there's a body perishes, the reflected consciousness also will perish, will go away. So chitabhasa is also subject to birth and death. It is also subject to modifications, vikaram. Just as if there is a sun reflected in the mirror, when the mirror moves, the reflections also will move. If the reflection is taken from one place, place one to two, the reflection also moves to place two. In short, the reflection is at the mercy of the mirror. Mirror moves, reflection moves, but not the original sun. Original sun stays wherever it is. Similarly, the chidabhasa, the reflected consciousness, is subjected to the vikarams or modifications of the kshetram, namely the body, the mirror, but not the chit. Chit is kshetrajnaha. So, etat kshetram, Krishna concludes, this is kshetram. Etat kshetram, this is called kshetram. This, that means all these 24 principles is kshetram that we discussed in the last webinar. All the 24 principles. Sa vikaram, along with its modifications, with respect to what? Iccha, dveshaha, sukham, dukkham, dhritihi. So, shloka number 6 refers to the kshetram, and sloka number 7 refers to the kshetra vikaram, modifications of the kshetram. So Krishna says, kshetram savikaram udahritam has been mentioned. So the savikara kshetram, the modified, the modifications belonging to the kshetram are mentioned. Samasena, samasena means in brief. So Krishna says it is brief because elaborate discussion involves the three gunas. If people have to elaborate this, it involves the three gunas and how each guna, the sattva guna, rajo guna, tamo guna, how each one of them contribute to various products. They all have to be discussed. Sattva guna produces mind. all according to Sankhya philosophy. Understand, we were talking about Sankhya philosophy in the last webinar. Rajoguna produces Jnanendriyas and Kanveyendriyas in Sankhya philosophy. So, Tamoguna produces the subtle elements. But in Vedanta, Sattvaguna produces Jnanendriyas. It's a contrast between Sankhya and Vedanta. So, in Vedanta, Sattvaguna produces Jnanendriyas, sense organs. In Sankhya, it is elaborate discussion. Not that we have to remember these differences between them. That is why Krishna says very briefly, Samasena Udahritam. It is adequate if you know only that much. We don't have to go into too much details in them, because that would be already the, whenever I talk about the Kshetra, Kshetram and all those analysis, 24 principles, people normally get confused. So we don't have to go too much. This is adequate. So why those details are not necessary? Here the relevance is only for this much. All these are Jada. If you know that much, that's good. Therefore, Kshetram. And let them be Sattva, Rajas or Tamas. We don't care. They are still Jadam only. So, the whole thing is Kshetra. And who is Kshetrajnaha? Different from them. Who is the witness of all of them? And where can you find the Kshetrajna? We can search all over the Kshetram. We will never find the Kshetrajna. We can search all through our life. We can now never find the Kshetrajna. Because whatever search we do, we will be researching in Kshetram only. Whatever search we do, we will be researching only in the Kshetram. We can never find the Kshetrajna. We can do anything. Because the Kshetrajna happens to be whom? Is myself. Kshetrajna is myself. That is why scientists are telling that they are not able to locate consciousness. They analyze the brain, all parts of the body. They analyze all of them. And they say consciousness has no location. It has no location because the one who wants to locate is consciousness. And so, I am the Kshetrajnaha, different from all these Kshetras. Okay, then one doubt might come. In these two shlokas, Krishna says, the whole creation, including the body, sense organs, etc., is Kshetram. That's what we found out. But in the second shloka of this same chapter, what did Krishna say? If you remember only, we may have a contradiction. Otherwise, we won't have a contradiction. Idam shariram kaunteya kshetramitya vidiyate. That's what he said. There he said, idam shariram is kshetram. This body is called kshetram. And here what does he say? The whole creation, pancha bhutani, etc. is creation, in creation. How can Krishna do that? And why? There is a reason, because we look at the whole universe, we accept the whole universe as an object of our knowledge. The whole universe as an object of our knowledge, we never identify with the world, external world. We look at the table, we never say, I am the table. So we clearly understand that the table is an object and I am the subject. I, the subject, am different from the table, the object. This is a Kshetram and I don't identify with this Kshetram. Similarly, the Pancha Bhutas, they are all there. Mountains, rivers, stars, etc. are all there. I look upon them as objects different from me. But what happens? When it comes to my body, the body also is very much part of the world. Annarasena Bhutva only. Yesterday the body was, maybe if you really look at it objectively, maybe the body was idli yesterday. And whatever food was, you know, taken previous day, that alone gets converted to blood, marrow, bones, all, you know, all those things, flesh, everything. So this is born out of matter, sustained by matter, and finally dissolves into earth, which is matter. So this also must be part of what? Kshetram only. But what do? When it comes to this body, we don't put this body in the Kshetram group, but we say, this is myself. We include as Kshetrajnaha. Everything else we say is Kshetram. This world, the sun, the moon, these people, everything. I say they are all Kshetram. But when it comes to my own body, I don't say this body, but we say it is myself. That is why Krishna specifically uses the word Idam Shariram. Only to knock it in our head. This body. Like this book. This table. he calls it this body. This body also should be put away as kshetram only. Look upon it as another tree or another body, another animal. Look upon it something else. So objectify that. Whereas our problem is what? Except the body, everything else we put in the kshetram, but the body alone we embrace as kshetragyaha. And we say, I see, I hear, I like, I dislike, all that we say. So this abhimanam, this association, this abhimanam being very strong, Krishna specifically mentions as a kshetra. And that is why in the second shloka, the disputed kshetram alone is mentioned. The other kshetras, he does not mention because there is no dispute there. There is no dispute with respect to the mountain or a river or a ocean or any of those things as kshetram. There is no dispute. Only with respect to the body. That's why he says, idam shariram. Whereas in these two shlokas, he talks about kshetram in its totality. And that is the reason in the Upanishad also, when we do atma anatma vivekaha, we are differentiating only atma and the body. This book comes under atma or anatma. For example, this book, if I take a book or table, comes under atma or anatma. It is anatma. But why no Upanishad says that book is anatma and you are different from that? It never says that. Upanishad does not have to do that because it is known to everyone that book is anatma, different from me. So is the table, so is the dress, so is the computer, all that. There is no controversy in any of them. But controversy comes only the panchakosha, when that comes only, the sharira trayam. When this body comes only, the controversy comes. Whether the sharira trayam, the three bodies, the sthula shariram, sukshma shariram, karana shariram should be in the atma list or anatma list. So that is where confusion comes. So panchakosha viveka is done. Discrimination of all the five layers. Sharira traya viveka is done. The discrimination of all the three bodies. Because that is the controversial anatma part. All other anatmas have no controversy, but this alone has. And we have to take one more point also. A person's identification with the external world is not uniform. One man has identification with the house. For him, everything is his house. For another, it is wife and children. For another, it may be job. For a musician, it is all music. So with respect to the external world, the abhimanam or association varies from individual to individual. Whereas the panchakosha abhimanam, that is the sharira traya abhimanam, is not one individual's problem. It is a common problem of all individuals. It is universal. In the kshetra identification, if you really analyze, in the other part of kshetras, identification is not universal, whereas this part of the kshetra, namely the body, the panchakoshas or sharira trayas, that is, it is universal. Everybody has that abhimanam. So the identification is universal, whether he is Hindu, Christian, Muslim, foreigner, male, female, human being, animal, for all of them, that identification is universal. This kshetra abhimana is universal. And therefore, Krishna specifically mentions, O Arjuna, everyone has got his problem that they take the shariram as kshetrajnaha. They take their body as kshetrajnaha, the subject. So first, you note the shariram comes under kshetram, the object only. So, etat kshetram samasena savikaram udahritam. So that is perfectly all right. That's what we want to interpret. Shloka 8. Amanitvam adambitvam ahimsakshantirarjavam acharyopasanam shaucham stairyamadmavinigraha. So with the previous shloka, shloka number 7, the kshetram topic was concluded. Now in the second shloka, kshetram was defined briefly, idam shariram kaunteya kshetram, and this body is kshetram. In the 6th and the 7th shlokas, kshetram was defined elaborately. Then kshetrajnaha also has been talked as etat yo veti, the one who is consciousness of the whole kshetram. And the most important information was this consciousness, this conscious kshetrajnaha is the all-pervading consciousness Kshetram Chapi Mam Viddi, the all-pervading non-dual reality. So with the seventh shloka, both the Kshetram and Kshetrajna topics are over. Now, if we recall Arjuna's question, what was that? Prakritim Purushan Chaiva Kshetram Kshetrajna Evacha Etat Veditim Ichami Jnanam Nyeyam Cha Keshava. That was the question. Of these six, Krishna has already talked about 3 and 4. Kshetram and Kshetrajna are answered. Now, Krishna takes up the fifth one called Jnanam. Topic is taken up from the 8th to the 12th shlokas. As was said in the introduction, here in the 13th chapter, Jnanam does not mean self-knowledge. It's a unique context. Jnanam means the virtues or values. This is maybe the only place in this literature where Jnanam is meant as values. In all other places, it is Jnanam is knowledge, which are conducive for Atma Jnanam. These values are conducive for Atma Jnanam. They promote, they support Atma Jnanam. For example, when a doctor prescribes a medicine, he prescribes some disciplines, some patyam, do's and don'ts. We call it patyam in Ayurveda. So we should not ask which is important. Both are equal. No compromise. You have to take the medicine. You have to also follow the patyam, the disciplines. So if a person takes a medicine without patyam, the medicine goes waste. The vice versa also is true. He is only observing patyam but not taking the medicine also will not help him. Here also, all the people have got a grave disease called samsara or bhava roga. Everybody has got this disease. What is the medicine for that? The atma jnana aushadam, Vedanta Shravanadikam, that is the only medicine. Unless a person gains Atma Jnanam, he cannot cross the samsara. So if the Vedanta Shravanam medicine is must really benefit us, what we should do? Along with the Vedanta Shravanam, one has to observe certain patyam also, disciplines. One has to observe that also. Person has to do that. So, and the patyams are 20 items of virtues are given, the do's and don'ts, the vidhi and nisheda, what should be done, what should not be done. He will tell some more actually in the 16th chapter, Daivi Sampath, we are going to look at it then. And since these are the patyams to be followed for Atma Jnanam, they themselves were named as Jnanam. These are the disciplines required to gain Atma Jnanam. They themselves, the values themselves were called Jnanam. In fact, they are not Jnanam, they are only disciplines to be followed. But Jnana Sadhanatvatu Jnanam iti Uchyate. That's what Shankaracharya interprets. And so how much importance must be given to this? As much importance is given to Vedanta Shravanam, that much should be given for these values also. Without that, the Shravanam will not be beneficial. Unfortunately, as Swamiji says, the value of the values is not understood at all. Swamiji gives separate lectures on values of the values. Swami Dayananda Swamiji. And then what happens? When the person does not find benefit from the scriptural study, he does not understand that the problem is with these values. He thinks that some more puja or some more japa will benefit him. Increase the puja for 2 more hours, more pilgrimages, do more number of Gayatris. All these religious exercises are for coming to the Shastras. Once we come to Shastra, more emphasis must be given to these 20 items, these 20 values. Am I able to follow them? And puja may give him the support of the Lord, the strength for him, but still he has to apply the strength towards these 20 values. So these 20 values have to be emphasized for all Vedantic seekers. But unfortunately, the seekers do not do lot of anushtanas, they carry out lot of pilgrimages, but Ragadvesha is not gone. They go all the way up to Mount Kailas. They take a dip in Manasarovar. They do parikrama. Still, when they do all that thing, still Ragadvesha is not gone yet. Anger, jealousy, impatience, they all continue. And he studies Vedanta. And Vedanta says what? Aham Shanta Swarupaha Asmi. That's what it says. So by doing pujas, God's anugraham is there, which should be converted to virtues. God will not give virtues, will give anugraham. That has to be converted by us. And so These are all very, very important portions in the Bhagavad Gita. Swamiji emphasizes these things very much. The moment one joins any Vedanta courses or anywhere, the first thing they teach is these five shlokas. That is the shloka of values. So, what are these do's and don'ts, the vidhi and nisheda? Amanitvam. Amanitvam in the form of a don't to be avoided. Manitva means Atma Vishaya Slaganam. Shankaracharya says, that is the definition he gives, praising oneself. Always I praise myself. Looking oneself as superior, or the so-called superiority complex. People, a lot of people suffer that complex. Superiority complex, a lot of people suffer inferiority complex also. So, and Amanitva means the absence of the superiority complex. Thinking that I am the biggest. Here itself there are two varieties. Some people will feel superior. They will have some superior qualities also. With genuine reason, they may feel superior. They have, you know, accomplished certain things. They can feel superior. So they have got, for example, they are gold medalists. They got all these big, big Padma awards. They might have got. And that is, they feel superior. And there is another category who have accomplished nothing, but the feeling is superior. He thinks that he is great. So, genuinely or without proper reason, feeling superior is called manitvam. You know, Shakespeare used to say, some are born great, some achieve greatness, some have greatness thrust upon them. And there is a fourth category, some assume greatness. Whether they have any greatness at all or not, they assume greatness. So, without proper reason, they may feel superior, or some people may feel superior because of accomplishment, but whatever it is called manitvam. So, vidyamanaihi avidyamanaihi va gunaihi atmani pujyatva pujyatva atmani pujyatva bhavana. That is called this manitvam. So, either with good qualities that one has or one does not have, superiority complex they have. Okay. Why is this wrong? After all, I have accomplished things. Why should I not feel superior? This can be looked at again from two angles, from worldly angle as well as from the Vedantic angle. So, from the worldly angle, we can never claim superiority because from the point of view of some people, we may be superior. But remember, there are many people who are more superior, and from their standpoint, I am inferior only. So, superiority is only relative. No one is superior most in creation, except the Lord. Other than Lord, no human being can claim that he is superior most. And if he does, the problem is what? He will expect respect from others. Above all, when he finds a still superior person, he becomes jealous of him. So, whenever I feel superior, I should put the balancing thought in my mind that I am inferior also by looking at some people who are superior to me. Otherwise, jealousy will come. Mental disturbance will come. That cannot be avoided. In fact, one is always afraid somebody will beat my record. That is one category. And the second category is, from the Vedantic angle, whenever one claims superior, your Dehabhimanam gets strengthened. Because superiority and inferiority differences come at what level? At the Atma level or Anatma level? They all come at the Anatma level only. All my accomplishments belong to Anatma. So, if I have to claim superiority, I have to have identification. The more I claim, the more stronger the identification to Anatma becomes. So, from Atma Drishti, there is neither superiority nor inferiority. Wave is bigger or water is ocean is bigger. From Nama Rupa, ocean is bigger. From content of water, there is no superior or inferior. There is only water. So, superiority complex increases anatma abhimana, attachment to the body. And it is an obstacle to atma jnanam. More anatma abhimana, less are the chances to gain atma jnanam. So, is inferiority complex. Then, this is amanitvam. Then, dambitvam. That is another obstacle. Dambitva means, Shankaracharya says, swadharma prakatikaranam. Prakatikaranam means expressing outside one's noble actions. Oh, I did this, I did that, I contributed so much money there, I built this thing. So prakatikaranam, go on announcing, boasting. In short, one's superiority only. I have done this, I have done that and all. I have done this much charity, built so many temples. All those things people can talk about. So talking about oneself too much, that is called prakatikaranam. Pomp and show, all that. So the show can be in language, it could be in dresses, it could be in the way one behaves, all those things. So it is in vesha, bhasha, and bhushadibihi. So bhushadibihi, swa mahatva prakatikaranam. By all these, vesha, bhasha, bhushadibihi, swa mahatva prakatikaranam. Showing to others one's status, education, all those things people do. So in the olden days, it was in the form of yagas and yajnas. So Shankaracharya writes, swadharma prakatikaranam. People used to, oh, I did such a big yajna, I did such a big yaga. It can help in the spiritual field also. One can go tell everyone, I have studied the Upanishads, I have studied Gita, I go to Gita classes, I do all these things. I wake up at 3 o'clock and do 1000 Gayatri Japa every day. They can keep on telling it to others also. This is called Dambitvam. And what is the difference between Manitvam and Dambitvam? Manitvam is at the feeling level. I feel superior. At the Bhavana level, he might not tell it outside. That is why we find anyone in any professional field considers the other people in the field are inferior. Two people may be PhDs. This guy thinks I know my subject much more than what the other guy, he may be also PhD too, what that guy knows in his subject. So this always people have this thing, this kind of, superiority inferiority complex. So such people, they go to some concert or lecture only to find out the mistakes. So he may not know anything himself. Oh, today this person did not talk well. His thing is just only to find out some mistakes. Let me go find out how much he knows. So people have all these kinds of tendencies. If not, one thinks that I know more in my field than the other person knows in his field. So these are all manitvam, feeling, not expressed outside. But inside they think they are superior. But in dambitvam, it is not at the feeling level, it is prakatikaranam, showing, expressing. So it is still worse. Manitvam is subtle, mental. Dambitvam is gross, physical. So conquering dambitvam is easier. Conquering manitvam is very difficult because it is at the mental level. And the harm done by dambitvam also is very similar to manitvam. Because here also, when my glory is suppressed by another person, then my prestige is affected. My ego is hurt. So wound is the result of dambitvam, disturbance of mental peace. So Veda Buddhi is stronger. So Dehabi Abhimanam. Dehadi Abhimanam also becomes stronger because I value more in my dressing only because I value the body more. So I can have Dehabhimana, I can have Kulabhimana, I can have Gotrabhimana, I can have Varnabhimana, I am a Brahmana, I am a Kshatriya, I am a Vaishya. So I can have all these Abhimanas. So Dambitvam comes out of Anatma Abhimana. Association with anatma body out of Veda Buddhi. So it is an obstacle to Atma Jnanam. And so Adambitvam is important. Adambitvam is opposite. So lead a simple life. And third one is Ahimsa. Himsa means injury. Ahimsa is non-injury, non-violence. And this is also very important. My very important value. In fact, in Sannyasa Ashrama, the most important vow taken is Ahimsa Vratam. He calls all the people, the sannyasi, the moment he becomes, calls all the people, the devatas, the animals. Before taking sannyasa, he says, and he tells, you need not worry about me. Actually, we saw in the 12th chapter, Yasmat na udvijate lokaha. I will not cause disturbance, pain to anyone. So Ahimsa Vratam is a very important discipline. And Ahimsa also is all the three levels. At the physical level, with my body, I don't injure anybody. And at the words level, vachikam level, I don't injure anybody by using abusive words. and with my mind in my thoughts, I don't injure anybody at the manasam level. So injury can be done with these three instruments. And on the other side also, there are two types of injury. I can injure a person's body, or still worse, I can injure a person's mind. So five different points we have to see. The instrument of injury is three: thought, word and deed. The objects of injury is two: body and mind. Okay, these are the five: thought, words and deed one can injure from, by, and the objects of injury is you can injure the body or the mind of another person. So all these are different types of himsa, and one should carefully avoid them. And the himsa can happen in different situations. Sometimes himsa is unprovoked, because by my carelessness I can harm. By my inadvertent language, action, I did not mean it perhaps. Always one should be very careful. Lack of sensitivity, care, a person should take care of all these things. So even without your knowledge, you can hurt somebody. And this another type of injury is, because he hurt me, so I hurt also. Injury for injury, tit for tat. This comes as a reaction, provocation, self-defense injury. All these things can happen. So that also must be carefully avoided. I can be patient, I can be calm. These are all we have to suggest to ourselves. And the third type of injury is to correct others, punishment to wrongdoers. Our motive is good. We claim as we are free from all mistakes, as though we are free from all these mistakes. This is generally done by superiors, bosses, house owners, to servants they do, parents to children they do, corrective punishment. We say, whatever be it, himsa is harmful for both the receiver and giver. However, this is accepted at least as a last resort. Shama, dana, beda, danda, in all these things, you know, when all fail, then danda, that is the last resort. Why it is said like that? Himsa is like a powerful medicine. It has a lot of tremendous side effects. But when all the other medicines fail, the doctor gives a mild dose of that medicine. And the second problem is, once a powerful medicine is used, immediately it removes the symptom. So our tendency is to apply it often. So even for the smallest difficulty, one feels like using the powerful dose. And the third problem is, one becomes an addict to that medicine once applied. One needs. So not only that, later the same dosage will not be enough. You have to increase the dosage. Already body got used to that dose. So the system gets more and more damaged. Finally, this powerful medicine removes the symptoms, but never removes the root disease at all. Like all these cortisones, there are these medicines that will remove the pain, that make your pain numb, but it will not remove the root cause of the pain. It will not do it. Similarly, so it is of no help ultimately. Similarly, himsa method, or the method of getting angry or punishing, etc., may work immediately. And so we think that anger is best method of changing, correcting a person. But anger or himsa has all the effects of a powerful drug. First of all, it has got a tremendous side effect on the one who gets the anger. The mind is very affected. If I get angry, my mind is highly agitated. Not only the mind, even the physical body produces a lot of adrenalines, all those things, and so many enzymes which will damage the digestive system, cause other problems. Just as tension creates ulcers and all that, anger also creates physical problems. So first problem of himsa is tremendous side effects on the patient and the doctor both. And the second thing is, once anger works, tendency is to apply what? For everything. Once anger works somewhere, your tendency is to apply anger everywhere. And the third one is, once one becomes an addict, afterwards, even if you want to stop anger will hold on to you. It will not go away. So one will be addicted to getting angry. And the fourth problem is, dosage has to be increased. First time in one shouting, your child might listen. Next time twice, and later no effect and shouting at all. And the fifth problem is, anger never changes a person. One does it out of fear, perhaps. He is not convinced that he is committing a mistake. So, does not change innately by fear of punishment, the person obeys. But when there is no other go, like cancer, chemotherapy and all, but it is a life and death problem, so the doctor has to administer certain things. Similarly, himsa can be used only when all other methods have failed. So, ahimsa is an important virtue. All these negative things do two damages. One, the peace of mind goes away. And second, bheda buddhi becomes stronger. It is like being, you know, biting one's own tongue with the teeth during eating. We don't knock off the teeth because it is our own teeth. Similarly, if our child or wife does something wrong, we don't have to get so wild. If we have identification with the child, we don't have to get that wild at all. So, himsa creates bheda buddhi. So, it's an obstacle to self-knowledge. Then the next one is kshantihi kshama. Kshama means patience. Once we have decided to practice ahimsa, then it has to be followed by kshama. Because when a person commits a mistake, generally the powerful dose is what? Punishing him, scolding him, dismissing him. That is the himsa method of correcting. If you are not going to use the himsa method, then correction is going to be a slow process. And so a person will not be corrected immediately. So it requires a lot of patience on my part without scolding or injuring the person. We have tried to correct with love. Method of love, you know, takes a lot of time, but will permanently change the person. And since it is a slow process, till the other person changes, this person will have to suffer. He has to endure. He cannot react. He cannot be wild, so will undergo suffering, putting up with the other person for a long time. Like Gandhiji, non-violent method, he had to undergo torture himself. So ahimsa methods requires tremendous strength and courage, love to everybody, and also the endurance to suffer. So it has to be followed by kshama. Then only ahimsa can be practiced well. So kshantihi. Then arjavam. Arjava means being straightforward. That is my thought, my word, my deed. They are all aligned completely in harmony, in consonance. Arjavam is derived from the word Riju, a straight one. Riju Rekha, this opposite of Vakram. Vakram is bent and all that. Riju Rekha is straight. So, Rijo Bhavaha Arjavam, being in one straight line. My mental personality, my oral communication, and my physical personality all are in one line. There is no split personality at all. I speak what I think. I do what I speak. So there's a tremendous strain, inwardly dislike, outwardly cannot show that. That's a big problem. The only way is from the mind, hatred has to be removed. Otherwise, with split personality, split becomes my nature. Then when I want to do noble things, what happens? I will not be able to do because my body, my mind, they have become completely separated. And so arjavam is very important because we will be one whole personality. We will be one integrated person only when there is arjavam. In fact, one part of arjavam alone is satyam. Satyam is harmony between thought and speech. Arjavam is harmony between thought, word and deed also. It includes satyam. In fact, Shankaracharya says later that Arjuna himself got the name because of this virtue alone. Arjunaha means the one who is straightforward. It seems there is a tree by the name Arjuna which also grows straight, not bent or anything, grows straight. So arjavam is straightforwardness, non-crookedness. Non-crookedness, so avakratvam. Vakratvam means bent, crooked. This is avakratvam. Then acharya upasanam. Acharya upasanam means acharya guru. The word acharya is used generally for any teacher. Even Dronacharya was called acharya who taught warfare. Dronacharya did not teach any other dharmic values and all that. He taught warfare. But in this context, acharya means Vedanta acharya. Why do we take that meaning here? Because these 20 values are prescribed to a Vedantic student. The definition of Acharya is Swam, Swayam, Acharan, Paran, Acharayiti, Iti Acharyaha. Swayam Acharan, he should be following himself. Paran, Acharayiti, he should make others to follow. So one who follows a way of life and makes the other people also follow the same way of life. So Swayam Acharan, himself follows that. Everyone is good. To ask others to follow, advice is always meant for others, right? And if an Acharya says, Satyam Vada, he must follow that himself fully. So, Swayam Acharan and Paran or Anyan Acharayati, make the others also follow. He is called Acharya. Okay, why do we emphasize Acharya Upasanam, worship or puja of Acharya? This is unique in our culture. In all other cultures, especially the Western culture, they can never imagine one man prostrating to the other. But in our culture, right from childhood, it is common. Anyone comes, we do namaskaram to them. It is a training given to us. Wonderful value. We can see many ideas behind Krishna emphasizing this namaskaram, Acharya Upasana. Number one, it gets Chitta Shuddhi. Because Guru Namaskara is as good as Ishwara Namaskara. Guru Puja is as good as Ishwara Puja. How do we say so? Because Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwaraha, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Guru is the Trinity, is the ultimate. That is what the scriptures have taught us. Because of his purity and knowledge, Guru has become one with the Lord. So all other Jivas have got Veda Buddhi. They are in Jiva Ishwara Bedam, whereas in the case of a Guru, this Jiva Ishwara Veda Buddhi is broken. He has become one with Ishwaraha through his purity and wisdom. So, Aham Brahmasmi Iti Jnanena. He has become like that. And this will be very useful for a seeker, especially if he is in a Guru Kulam along with the teacher. So, because as a student, he is a brahmachari or sannyasi, he has no other means of purifying his mind. He cannot do rituals. He cannot do annadanam because they are all in the grahasthashrama only. So, if the student already has a pure mind, there is no problem. But we have some impurity left out. Best way of washing is worshipping the teacher. So, tadviddhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. In fact, Upasana, Shankaracharya, he translates this as seva, service to Guru, worship of Guru. So, first benefit of Guru Puja is Chitta Shuddhi, purification of mind. And the second benefit is, when I respect the teacher, I have got Shraddha, faith in the words of the teacher. So, Guru Bhakti will lead to Shastra Bhakti, Shastra Shraddha. And faith in the Shastram is very important for knowledge. We have seen in the fourth chapter, Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam. So, getting faith in the Shastram is not easy because the teaching of the Shastram is very much different from what I experience day to day. I feel I am mortal, but Shastra says I am immortal. Who will believe this? Every day I feel I grow old, I grow gray hair, I have knee pain, joint pain, that pain, but Shastram says what it says, Najayate Mriyate Va Kadachite. Not only that, Shastram says you are infinite. And I'm all the time depressed, worried about something or the other. While Shastram says you are Ananda Swarupaha, embodiment of bliss. Who will believe all this? And we always see Dvaitam in the practical world. Never experience Advaitam at all. But Shastram says Advaitam Eva Asti, Dvaitam Naiva Asti. Who will believe this again? So, Vedanta happens to be such a unique teaching that swallowing is not easy at all. That is why this asan nevasa bhavati asad brahmeti veda ched, that's what it said in the Upanishad. After 15 years of study also, suddenly a doubt will come. Is there really an Atma? Person may be a Vedantic student for 15 years. Even after that, he can get a doubt. Really, is there an Atma at all? No doctor has found out the Atma by cutting the body. Are we blindly believing or brainwashed to believe that there is Atma? All these questions will come. then Shraddha will come and we read some Westerner writing that Vedas are written by some prattlers who had no other job. Thus, Shraddha in the Shastra is very difficult. But if Shraddha in Guru comes, because Guru is someone whom one can solidly experience, personally available with love, ananda, courage, etc. So to develop a faith in a human being is simpler. But to develop faith in the written book is not that easy. So first we develop faith in the Guru, and then the Guru says that you should have faith in the Shastra, that will help us. And so Guru Bhakti helps in developing faith in the Shastras. In fact, Guru is a representative of Shastram only. He never claims anything as his own. That is why they say Guru Stotra, Vedanta, you know, all those things they say, because Guru never claims anything as his own. A lotus bud, ambujam, is closed. You cannot enjoy its glory. So if it has to open, the sun god, Surya, must come. It will bloom and its beauty can be experienced by all of us. That is the difference. So similarly, Vedanta is like a lotus bud. If one tries to study it by oneself, it will be closed. It will not mean anything to anybody. So bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, it is far away and near. Who will understand all that? Vedanta says all that. Upanishad says all this. So just now we finished Isavasya Upanishad. So it says it moves, but it is stable. All that thing it says. So every statement does not mean anything like the closed bud. But when the Guru, the sun, arises, every sentence of Vedanta becomes meaningful. So it opens up completely and I get the full benefit of Vedanta Shastra. And so our access to Shastra is only through the Guru. He only has the key for the box of Amritam. So Guru Bhakti and Shraddha are as good as Shastra Bhakti and Shraddha. This is the second benefit. First it is Chitta Shuddhi, second is this one. And then one more benefit is based on psychology. Whenever you worship a person, like hero worship, we generally try to imitate that person. In music field, the Shishya always imitates the Guru's way of singing, or imitating an actor, a player, a teacher. Even the Upanishads say, Yata yata upaste tadeva bhavati. Whatever you respect, what you think of all the time, you become that. When I have so much respect for my teacher, unknowingly, I imitate many of his traits. Especially in a Gurukulam, constantly living with the teacher. So, yatate tatra varte renne, tata tatra varte taha. So, even Shastram allows imitation. Imitation is good when the other person is good. That is why Shankaracharya said, satsangatve nissangatvam. In physics, they call it sympathetic vibrations. When two wires vibrate, the other one also gets the vibrations. Similarly, if you move with a materialistic friend, gradually you also turn to be materialistic. And if you move with a saint, your mind also unknowingly becomes saintly. After some time, we observe ourselves. We ourselves wonder, are we so good? I cannot believe. We ourselves wonder. So, Guru Puja will help the student to follow the footsteps of the teacher. And all the values the teacher has, he will also gather. So this is the third benefit of Acharya Upasana. But we should remember, this is possible only in the case of a live guru. For example, if I keep Shankara's photo and worship, Chitta Shuddhi is possible and the Shraddha also may be possible. But the third benefit I won't get if I worship a photo, because I am not living with Shankara. Satsanga is not there. So, Acharya Upasana. Then comes Saucham. Saucham is purity. We have seen before purity at two levels. The external level and internal level. External purity includes the surroundings, our dress, our body, all those things. And that is relatively easier also. For some people even that may be difficult. And the second one is mental purity. That the purity of thoughts. That is alone we ignore, because it is difficult to control the mind, and two, other people do not know what is in my mind. They cannot see. If they can see, we'll be cautious. I will dress better because others can see the dirt, but not the mind. A Vedantic seeker must be aware of every thought and, like a gardener, must weed out every negative thought. All weeds should be removed. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, Raga, Dvesha. All of them have to be. Throughout Gita, Krishna has been talking about all these. He will talk in the 16th chapter, Daivi Sampat, Asuri Sampat. We are going to see all of them. Here itself, Manitvam is a negative thought. Amanitvam, humility, is a positive thought. Dambitvam is negative. Adambitvam is positive. Himsa, negative. Ahimsa, positive. Irritation, negative. Shanti, positive. So, how to purify the mind? If we ask, Shankaracharya gives the method of Pratipaksha Bhavana. Every negative thought is cancelled or displaced by a corresponding positive thought. This is called Pratipaksha Bhavana. That is, when pride is a problem, humility should be practiced. When hatred, dvesha, is the problem, I have to bring love, the opposite. Similarly, when I like to talk about the drawbacks of others for a change, why can't I talk about the good points in others also? It's a good experiment. We should remember, all criticisms are only to feel myself superior. And I refuse to praise the other people because then I think I go down. That is what we think, but that is not true. So by admiring the goodness of others, I never become small. In fact, I become only great by that. So every negative thought must be displaced by a corresponding positive thought. We call it Pratipaksha Bhavana, the opposite side. So in our mind, the ruling party is something, Raga, Dvesha, Kama, Krodhas. So the opposition party is all good virtues and should displace them. In fact, this is prescribed in Yoga Shastra, Patanjali Sutra. And another important idea also taken in the 6th chapter. So, Abhyasena tu Kaunteyam, Vairagena tu Grihyate. So, this is how you get it. So, for wandering of the mind in meditation, Abhyasa and Vairagya were prescribed. That also was borrowed from the Yoga Shastra only. And there are many methods also. Another one is devotion to the Lord. So every day during prayer, one has mentally to try to remove all the negative thoughts and submit them at the feet of the Lord and can take up all the positive virtues. I offer my dirt to the Lord. Thus, prayer is the method of purification also. And the third thing is association with the Satpurusha. This is called Satsangam, also unknowingly influences the person. So, Satsanga, Ishwara Bhakti, Pratipaksha Bhavana all help in the purification of the mind, Saucham. Then we will take the other remaining qualities in the next webinar. Yo Veda Dausvara Prokto Vedante Cha Pratishtitaha Tasya Prakritilina Seya Parasa Maheshwara Asti Krishna Arpanamastu.